Chapter 19. Lucy and Nick moved back out to the kitchen. She finished her geographic profile while he began dinner. The aroma of ziti and meatballs filled the kitchen. She called Taylor and forwarded her results to him. It was hard to focus with so many childhood memories wafting through her olfactory senses. Her mom would have never approved of feeding company frozen leftovers. She would have made everything fresh, from scratch. Taylor sounded excited, but then he always sounded that way. You narrowed it down to an area in southeast Ohio, western Pennsylvania, and... in a tiny part of West Virginia and Maryland, she finished. I know it's a lot of ground to cover. Not sure if it will be much help. No, boss, this is great. Finally, something concrete to give me some search parameters. Nick sat down beside Lucy, making a shopping list while absently stroking her arm with his free hand. Maybe the fight wasn't over. They definitely hadn't resolved anything, hadn't even begun to discuss her career options. But this detente was nice. He helped her feel not quite as out of step with Nick and her family. Hell, the whole damn world. I've been thinking, Taylor continued, the sound of his fingers pounding his keyboard echoing through the cell phone. Why did this guy wait until after he'd already sold June to Green Elephant Man before selling the baby girl image collection? I mean, he was sitting on a gold mine, right? Lucy had wondered that as well. Maybe once he found a new victim, he no longer was emotionally attached to June, didn't mind her images out there for others to be using. Nick tapped her arm and shook his head. In between milk and OJ on his shopping list, he'd written, obsessed. Or maybe I'm wrong, she conceded. Nick was right. Why would their subject, God, how she despised calling him daddy. It defiled every definition of the word, especially here in this house that held the only remaining memories of her own father. Why would he still be this obsessed with June now? In her experience, once predators lost interest in their victims, they moved on without looking back again. What about money? Taylor asked. Maybe he didn't get all the money from Green Elephant Guy when the deal went sour. Maybe that left him short on cash and he needed to make some fast. Okay. So emotionally, he's obsessed with June. That's why he starts with such young new victims. He hopes to groom them into being just like June. Does that mean he's still obsessed with her? Even after all these years? And now her being pregnant gives him the perfect chance to bring everything back full circle. Nick nodded his approval at her theory. I don't know about any of that, Taylor said. I'm just saying that if there's a money trail, we've got something we can maybe follow. And according to Green Elephant Man's case file, he withdrew sums adding up to $32,000 in cash the week before June was found. That's a pretty specific number. I know. Might mean something. I can throw it into the search algorithm, see what pops. Sounds good. Let me know if you find anything. She hung up, staring at the map now filled with colored tracings. Every time I start to think I understand this guy, it makes me want to run in the other direction. Nick squeezed her hand.
He's not the worst you've come up against. You'll get him.
She wished she had his confidence. But this guy, this daddy, he felt more twisted than any of the others. More than his warped idea of family. Turning his wrath on Seth after June became pregnant. He could have easily assassinated Seth right there in the street when they first met. But it wasn't enough to kill the only man besides himself that June had ever loved. No, this SOB had to turn it into a sick game, taunting Seth, torturing him with a certain painful death. More than that, he wanted Seth to know he'd die, leaving his family unprotected and at Daddy's mercy. Bile filled her mouth, and she left the table, not bothering with the cane for the short trip down the hall to the bathroom. On her way to the kitchen, she slapped outside the half-open door to her mom's bedroom. Inside, She saw what to anyone else would seem like the perfect family. June lying back on the bed, propped up so that she could comb Megan's unruly curls, taking care with the tangles. Megan sat beside Seth, and together, they leafed through an old leather-bound photograph album, the one with Coletta's wedding pictures. "That's Graham's in high school," Megan pointed proudly. "Doesn't she look like a movie star?" She flipped the page. "Oh, and here's her first date with Grandpa. He took her to a dance. Look at him, wearing a tuxedo to a school dance, and it wasn't even the prom." She sighed and looked up at Seth. "I never got to meet him, you know? He died when Mom was 12, so it was just her and Graham's." Seth's shoulders sagged and he turned away. Lucy pushed the door open to rescue him. "Dinner's about ready," she announced. Seth helped June up from the bed as Megan replaced the photo album. Outside, lightning cracked through the sky and rain pelted the window. Damn, she thought the storm wasn't supposed to hit until later tonight. Her phone rang. Taylor. "I've got something, boss," he announced breathlessly. "What is it?" "Got a call from Pittsburgh police. They found our motorcyclist slash shooter. Dead." "I'm on my way." He gave her the address and she hung up the phone. Seth and June had left, but Megan sat on the floor in front of the bookcase, glaring at Lucy. "Don't say it," Megan said. "I know what's coming." First word spoken directly to Lucy in weeks. A clap of thunder boomed beyond the window. "You know they lose power up here all the time when it storms," Lucy said, ignoring what she couldn't change. "Can you help your dad gather the flashlights? Start a fire?" "Because you have to go. There's some kid out there more important than me, some bad guy more important than dad." The words didn't come out bitter or angry, more like resigned. Megan pushed up to her feet and turned her back on Lucy. "Megan," Lucy stopped, realized she didn't have an answer. Had she ever? Pain tightened her chest as she wanted so badly to grab Megan in a hug, somehow find the words to make everything right. At that moment, she was glad she'd left the cane behind in the kitchen. She realized now why she truly despised the thing, not because it drew attention to her weakness, but rather because it was a constant reminder that things were different now, and they could never be the same again. Lucy stepped forward onto her good foot, finally close enough to reach Megan. Using both hands, she hugged her from behind, pulling Megan's rigid body against hers, holding tight. "I miss her too." Megan's shoulders slumped, and she turned to face Lucy, not fighting, but also not returning Lucy's hug. But she didn't run away from Lucy's touch, so it was a step in the right direction. So much anger. The counselor said anger was a normal part of the grieving process, but Lucy sensed there was something more beneath Megan's constant fury. It wasn't until now, standing in her mother's room, inhaling the faint memory of Coletta's perfume, that she remembered being a few years younger than Megan. Her father had just died, and she'd stood in almost this same spot, lashing out at her own mother. More than anger, she remembered the emotions that had crashed down on her those first few months after Dad died. Coletta could do nothing right, nothing to break through to Lucy. It was as if after suffering the pain of losing one parent, Lucy felt the need to build a barrier between her heart and her love of her mother, anything to protect her from feeling that anguish again. Not anger, fear. Lucy bowed her head over Megan, allowing her weight to settle on both feet, to hell with the pain, and held on even tighter. "It's okay," she whispered. "It's okay to be afraid." She wanted to promise Megan that nothing would ever happen to her or Nick, that she had nothing to fear. But Lucy didn't make promises she couldn't keep, and after what Megan had seen firsthand 2 months ago, she'd never believe the empty words. "I hate you," Megan muttered into Lucy's shoulder, but the words had no bite. I hate your job. You go and leave us behind, and we never know what's happening. If you'll come home, or if you'll... She choked into silence. Lucy felt tears slide warm against the side of her neck. I hate leaving, Lucy said. But when things get bad, I think of you and Dad. It's what gives me the strength to make it through. All I ever want is to come home to you. That's what I'm always thinking, always. Do you understand that?
Magical thinking. Suddenly, Lucy realized she wasn't the only one in the family who used it as an emotional crutch. This was part of why Megan clung to the idea of keeping their home, of never moving away from the house that had become their family's touchstone. More than avoiding change, more than wishing for things to go back to the way they were before.
Megan, I will always, always fight to come home to you.
Lucy kissed the top of Megan's head and released her.
But talk to me if you're upset or afraid. Don't push me away.
Megan didn't look up. She simply wiped her tears with the back of her hand and stared at the floor, at Lucy's injured foot.
You don't blame me? Blame you? For what?
Grams. She never would have been there if it wasn't for me. If I was old enough to take care of myself.
And there it was. Sorrow, more painful than anything Lucy's broken, twisted nerves could create, hit her so hard and fast she nearly lost her balance.
She hung on to Megan, the only way she could stay upright, bowed her head until it touched Megan's, both now sobbing, their bodies swaying in unison.
No, I don't blame you, Megan. God. The thought, even the suggestion, that it could have been Megan the killer found that night, alone, vulnerable.
Lucy refused to let it go to its natural conclusion. Magical thinking or not, she could not, she would not, allow such a vile image fill her mind, tempting fate.
No one blames you because it wasn't your fault. You can't ever think it was.
Grams would be the first to tell you that. Lucy wished she had better words to offer. That was Nick's department, and she fell woefully short. All she could do was speak from her heart.
We love you, Megan, and none of what happened was your fault.
She raised Megan's face to hers, tears brimming over in Megan's eyes and snot coating her upper lip.
Do you believe me? Will you remember that?
Megan nodded. Lucy gave her one last hug and a quick kiss on the forehead. Okay, go clean up for dinner.
You're still leaving?
I have to, sweetie. I have to stop the men after June and Seth. Not just because it's my job. Lucy hastened to add when bitter disappointment clouded Megan's face.
Because it's the right thing to do.
She drew in a breath, terrified of shattering the delicate bridge she and Megan had forged.
If we let men like that get away, then what happened to Grams could happen to someone else.
Megan frowned, shaking her head as if her mother was a lost cause.
Whatever.
And she was gone before Lucy could reach her. Lucy drove Nick's Explorer down the mountain. Glad she was in the larger SUV and navigating a proper two-lane road instead of the twisty, narrow lanes she'd taken past the dam and river and up the backside of the mountain earlier when she was in Taylor's Mini Cooper. The storm was a typical Pennsylvania March gale, blizzard-like winds accompanied by sheets of rain. It was slow-moving, forecast to last all night, leaving behind flooding and down-powered lines and the havoc that came with it. Despite the weather, she smiled. When she was a little girl, she'd been both terrified and fascinated with storms. Used to sit by her bedroom window and watch the lightning strikes dance above the trees.
Nice thing about living up here, her dad would say when he came in to check on her and took her in his lap,
wrapping her quilt around them both as they watched nature's fury.
We're protected from all that. No need to worry about flooding. If the dam bursts, and it won't, it will flood the lake and valley, but we're above it all. If the power gets knocked out, we've got our wood burner and fireplace and the propane tank to keep the well pumping. And this house? It's built solid, can weather just about anything. She'd turn in his embrace and look up at him.
But, Daddy, how can you be sure?
And he'd hug her tight. Because I built this house to keep you and your mom safe. For always. She reached the bottom of the mountain and turned onto Route 981. At the first stoplight, she pulled her phone out. No telling when she'd get another chance to charge it. Nick's phone was already plugged in. She sighed and swapped the phones out. He was constantly doing that, forgetting his phone. She made a note to call Megan if she needed to reach them. Hopefully with good news. She dialed Walden. How's Oshiro?
Planning a jailbreak. Not even taking the time to seduce any of the very cute nurses at his disposal.
Did Taylor let you know they found one of our wannabe kidnappers dead?
Yep. Do you want me back at the office or at the scene?
Actually, I was going to ask you to head over to my mother's house. She didn't want to say why. Despite the fact that her phone was secured with the latest encryption technology, after seeing the way June and Seth had been tracked, she didn't trust it. Walden was smart enough to fill in the blanks.
Want me to make sure everything is battened down for the storm?
If you don't mind.
No problem. But if you don't want Oshiro going Incredible Hulk on us, you'd better invite him as well.
They're not keeping him overnight?
Nope. Said he needs to take antibiotics and come back in 2 days for a wound check. He's gonna have a nasty set of scars, but the bullet didn't hit anything vital.
How much longer will you be? She was certain the others were safe up at her mother's house, but having Walden take June and Seth to another location would make her feel even better.
They just need to finish running this antibiotic is all. Bag's half empty already, so not long, I'm guessing. We'll head out as soon as it's done.
Sounds good. I appreciate you watching over things for me at home. Thanks. She hung up and continued up Route 22. She'd just hit the turnoff to the parkway when her phone rang. Taylor.
I'm almost there.
Got something, boss.
He sounded excited, but not in a good way. With Taylor, his moods ranged in almost as many shades of excitation as the pain from her ankle.
What happened?
Got a call from Don Burroughs.
Burroughs was a detective with Pittsburgh Police's major crimes unit. He caught our homicide. Said the guy was shot, point-blank range in the face, in the parking garage of an old bottling plant, with the bike from earlier today sitting right beside him. He paused expectantly.
And?
Lucy nudged.
And looks like motorcycle guy is tied to 5 other killings. We might have a serial killer on our hands.